TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness.
Will Trump deliver peace? Professor Jeffrey Sachs says that Israel might prevent it. To everybody's surprise, the Trump camp placed a quote by Sachs, critical of Netanyahu, on his Truth Social site. The quote by Jeffrey Sachs appeared on January 8, 2025. Sachs is professor and director of the Center for Sustainable Development at Columbia University. He has been special advisor to three United Nations Secretary Generals and currently serves under Secretary General Antonio Guterres. The quote posted on Trump social media came from a talk and debate given by Professor Sachs on October 22, 2024, at the prestigious Cambridge Union in England. In spite of the extraordinary analysis of causes and pretexts of wars presented by Sachs and some of his provocative statements, the speech and event remained unnoticed for 2.5 months until Donald Trump brought it to Truth Social and world media discovered it there. Here's the audio version of the article in the Jerusalem Post from January 10, 2025, beginning with the headline, Dark Son of a Bee.
Dark Son of a Bee, Trump posts video of economists saying Netanyahu dragged U.S. into wars. Sachs ranted about Netanyahu's obsession to manipulate U.S. foreign policy to get rid of Hamas and Hezbollah by removing regimes that support them via military force. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump shared a video of Jewish-American economist Jeffrey Sachs on his social media platform, Truth Social, on Wednesday, wherein Sachs called Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu a dark son of a bee and of dragging the U.S. into wars in the Middle East. The clip, shared by Trump, was from a guest speaker event in October 2024 at the Cambridge Union, a student-run society at Cambridge University in the UK. During the question-and-answer session of the event, Sachs was asked by an audience member to discuss the conflict between democracies and dictatorships, particularly with reference to the People's Republic of China and Washington-Beijing economic and geopolitical relations. In his answer, Sachs first stated that the U.S. is not really a democracy, given that so few people are informed about or agree with Biden's foreign policy. He also alleged that the media deliberately misinformed the American people about the true situation. Before answering the topic regarding China, he spoke about how a PR guru led this media misinformation and that the alleged deep state wanted the war all the time. They had to figure out how to sell the war to the American people, how to scare the ST out of the American people. He also referenced how the 2003 Iraq invasion was a phony war that came from Netanyahu, actually. Sachs then continued to allege that Netanyahu has manipulated Washington's foreign policy from 1995 onward in order to get rid of Hamas and Hezbollah by toppling the governments that support them. That's Iraq, Syria, and Iran. Sachs eventually went on to address Washington's relations with Beijing. A history of controversial political perspectives. Jeffrey Sachs is a Michigan-born Harvard-educated economist from a Jewish family and holds a professorship at Columbia University. Sachs often speaks out about geopolitical issues facing the U.S., including arguing for closer ties between the U.S. and China, supporting Donald Trump's 2018 decision to withdraw U.S. troops from Syria, denouncing U.S. sanctions on Venezuela, and questioning NATO's military support of Ukraine. Sam Halpern contributed to this report.
That was one of many surprised, angry, and confused reactions to the fact that Donald Trump had chosen to quote Professor Jeffrey Sachs on the causes of wars in the Middle East. And here's the original quote from Jeffrey Sachs that suddenly, mysteriously appeared on Truth Social on January 8.
And you may actually hear from grown-up reporters who are lying through their teeth or ignorant beyond imagining that, oh, the war in Syria, yes, Russia intervened in Syria. Well, do you know that that Obama tasked the CIA to overthrow the Syrian government starting 4 years before Russia intervened? What kind of nonsense is that? And how many times did the New York Times report on Operation Timber Sycamore, which was the presidential order to the CIA to overthrow Bashar al-Assad? 3 times in 10 years. This is not democracy. This is a game. and it's a game of narrative. Why did the U.S. invade Iraq in 2003? Well, first of all, it was completely phony pretenses. It wasn't, oh, we were so wrong, they didn't have weapons of mass destruction. They actually did focus groups in the fall of 2002 to find out what would sell that war to the American people. Abe Schulsky, if you want to know the name of the PR genius. They did focus groups on the war. They wanted the war all the time. They had to figure out how to sell the war to the American people, how to scare the shit out of the American people. It was a phony war. Where did that war come from? You know what? It's quite surprising. That war came from Netanyahu, actually. You know that? It's weird. And the way it is that Netanyahu had from 1995 onward the theory that the only way we're going to get rid of Hamas and Hezbollah is by toppling the governments that support them. That's Iraq, Syria, and Iran. And the guy's nothing if not obsessive. And he's still trying to get us to fight Iran this day, this week. He's a deep, dark sorry to tell you. Because he's gotten us into endless wars, and because of the power of all of this in the U.S. politics, he's gotten his way. But that war was totally phony. So what is this democracy versus dictatorship? Come on, these are not even sensible terms.
That was an excerpt from a talk Professor Jeffrey Sachs gave last October at the prestigious Cambridge Union in England. Friends, colleagues, and students of Jeffrey Sachs were just as surprised and also at a loss how to explain the sudden interest from the Trump camp. Here's a conversation between Glenn Deason, a Norwegian political scientist and university professor, and Alexander Mercouris, a London-based writer on international affairs, and Jeffrey Sachs. They spoke today on January 14, 2025, for almost an hour. Here are excerpts.
I really wanted to speak to the both of you today about the possibility of peace, especially now as Trump's moving into the White House. Perhaps people are too optimistic or pessimistic about the prospect. Again, I find it all, to be honest, sometimes confusing when I hear him speak. For example, Trump just posted an interesting video on social media, a video of you, Professor Sachs, where you are criticizing, I guess, efforts to portray always world conflicts as some sort of a struggle between democracy and authoritarianism. And your focus in the clip is Israel and the wars from Iraq, Syria, the genocide in Palestine, and, well, if Israel has its way, also Iran. So you point out that these wars don't really have anything to do with democracy, and you even came down pretty hard on Netanyahu.
Much deserved.
Much deserved. And this is possibly also why I was surprised that Trump would post this video, given that he tends to portray himself as Israel's best friend. But anyways, I thought it was interesting that Trump is now listening to you. It gives me reason to be optimistic. But I thought we can start by you maybe outlining some of your main ideas there, and also what you read into Trump's interest in your arguments.
Well, first of all, let's just say he posted some remarks that I made at Cambridge Student Union. I hope he listened to them. Who knows? But I can't read anything more into the posting except how amazing social media is, because there was a lot of interest in the posting, more interest than in my words, I think, but the interest in the fact that he posted them, which rather reverberated around the world and was headlined in Israel and so forth, because, yes, I made some harsh and caustic remarks about Netanyahu, who, after all, is under an arrest warrant of the International Criminal Court for crimes against humanity and for war crimes. So I think harsh remarks are absolutely due. And the point that I made about Netanyahu in particular is that he has been, I would say, the lead cheerleader in the United States for a series of disastrous wars. One can find remarkable statements online of Netanyahu cheerleading for the Iraq war in the fall of 2002, saying it's indisputable, no doubt, that Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction, and this is going to be the greatest thing that ever happens when the United States takes out Saddam. Well, not only did Saddam not have weapons of mass destruction, we know now from insiders that the whole argument was a known ploy beforehand. It wasn't an error of judgment. It wasn't faulty intelligence. It was, as is so much the case in foreign policy, what we would technically call BS. And it was deliberately BS to bring the American people into a war. And by the way, it's a horrible thing, but it's not hard to manipulate public opinion for war. And that's what was done in Iraq in 2003. We know that Netanyahu was the great cheerleader of the Obama administration, in this case, covert, which one also has always to put in quotation marks, war to bring down Bashar al-Assad, which started in 2011. What is a covert operation? It is an overt military operation that the perpetrator denies. So you stare at it. It's happening in full view. But they say, no, it's not us, not us. And the New York Times says, it's not them. They say so. So we'll repeat every word because we have a quotation from an unnamed senior official. This is what's called a covert operation. Well, Obama ordered the overthrow of Bashar al-Assad. The New York Times, I need to verify whether they covered this three times or two times in the 2010s, Operation Timber Sycamore. In other words, they never told the American people the truth about a presidential finding to overthrow another government. Anyway, that was Netanyahu once again. And we understand now from many different directions of insiders who have told us very important things that this was and by Netanyahu's own writing and by his political advisors' statements and by a plan that was unveiled back in 1996 when Netanyahu first became prime minister, written with American political advisors and called Clean Break, that this was a strategy for perpetual U.S. war in the Middle East to bring down all of the governments that supported the Palestinian cause by backing groups like Hamas and Hezbollah. So this is the point that I was making. I made it at the Cambridge Student Union. Trump retweeted it. It's not exactly his campaign speech. It's not exactly the mainstream of American foreign policy, which is so recklessly and ruthlessly in the hands of the Israeli extremists. It's almost unaccountable. And just yesterday, by the way, the chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Congressman Brian Mast, led the way for the U.S. House of Representatives to threaten in this law or this draft legislation, which probably will pass the Senate and be voted by President Trump, sanctions against the International Criminal Court. In other words, not against Netanyahu, not against those who commit war crimes, but against the court for pointing this out. So am I optimistic that things are going to change? Well, American foreign policy is very complex and pretty much continuous across administration. So we'll see. But in any event, it was on Truth Social. You learn a lot about social media in the world when the president posts your statement or when Elon Musk does, suddenly tens of millions of views show up. So this is our world right now. Very interesting. And we'll see.
Well, can I just say, anyway, it is a good thing that he is reposting your statements. I mean, it's better.
Agree.
It's a sign, and there might be some telltale things that point to some frictions between Netanyahu and Trump. There was an article in Axios about how the Israelis, which means, of course, the Netanyahu government, is trying to put pressure on Trump to launch missile strikes against Iran. And Trump doesn't seem too keen at the moment, judging by some of the things that he said. And Netanyahu is using the ICC warrant as a reason not to go to Washington to attend Trump's inauguration. Well, he did come to Washington in the summer and made some incredible speeches and really terrible speeches at that time. And the fact that there were proceedings in the ICC didn't worry him then. Now, I don't want to, you know, join too many dots.
No.
It's really very true.
We don't know right now. And I think what everybody does need to understand, because it's one of the most pertinent questions in the world right now, there's no doubt that Netanyahu has been on the war path for Iran for essentially 30 years. This is not a new story. And in the midst of all of the wars that he's provoked, Iran is the last one to fall. And this is very interesting because, as I mentioned, his cheerleading for the war in Iraq, his cheerleading for the war in Syria is absolutely plainly part of an agenda that included seven wars. And for that, we have we have many testimonials about that, but the most important is by the former U.S. commander of NATO, Supreme Commander Wesley Clark. Wesley Clark famously went to the Pentagon soon after 9/11, and a senior Pentagon official handed him a piece of paper that shocked even General Clark. And that General Clark has subsequently talked about extensively. Again, you can find his discussions online. But what that paper said was that it was the policy of the United States government that there would be seven wars in 5 years. This was Netanyahu's list. And the seven wars were wars across essentially the Arab region plus Iran, so across the Middle East and East Africa. They included Lebanon, Iraq, Syria, Iran, and then in Africa, Libya, Somalia, and Sudan. Now, the idea, according to a very important insider named Dennis Fritz, who was at the time a senior Air Force commander who later was tasked with going through classified documents about the Iraq War on behalf of one of its architects, Douglas Feith, has told us in a book called Deadly Betrayal that, yes, this idea of these serial wars, one after the other, was in fact the policy as early as late 2001. And what happened is very interesting. Iraq was the first of the seven wars. And then it was supposed to be Libya, Sudan, Somalia, Syria, Lebanon, and Iran. And why did they choose Iraq first? Also extremely interesting, not the way the story is told on the surface. They chose Iraq because they thought they had an excuse. And the excuse was a piece of legislation in the United States in 1998 under Clinton. This is way before 9/11, called the Iraq Liberation Act. It's stunning to read. It's a law that says it is the intention of the U.S. government to overthrow Saddam Hussein. It's a law on the books in 1998. 9/11 obviously became the excuse, the moment to move. And then when they decided under these arch-Zionists in the U.S. government, like Paul Wolfowitz and Douglas Feith, that now we're going to move, they decided what the order would be. And the first one was Iraq because they thought, here's a fig leaf of legal justification. We can justify this war. But you can't go to war over a congressional resolution in 1998. So they had to concoct a story. And they actually had a policy group inside the Pentagon, headed by a man named Abe Scholsky, to come up with the storyline for war. This sounds like a Hollywood movie. Now, of course, it was a Hollywood movie called Wag the Dog, about concocting the reasons for a war. But that was a documentary, it turns out. That wasn't a Hollywood fiction. This is exactly the Iraq War. And Netanyahu played his leading role. He made these cameo appearances in the U.S. Congress. This is the best thing you can ever do. Now, what happened, according to Douglas Fritz, absolutely fascinating, was the U.S. got bogged down in Iraq. You know, they thought it was shooting fish in a barrel, as they say, that this was a no-brainer that we take out Saddam, and they did, essentially immediately. But then there was local instability and insurrection, something the U.S. government never understands, never counts on, because it's not generals. It's about politics and society, of which these fools know nothing and get everything wrong all the time. So they got it wrong. The U.S. got bogged down in Iraq, and the seven wars in 5 years took longer. But the agenda was sustained. And this is another very important point about American foreign policy, one that President Putin has made on many occasions, which is the presidents come and go, but there is a deep continuity. After all, it was Clinton under which the Iraq Liberation Act was signed. It was Bush Jr. that launched the war in Iraq. It was Bush Jr. in his last year that invited Ukraine to join NATO, but it was Obama who presided over the coup that overthrew the Yanukovych government in 2014. Now, these are supposedly very different characters, Clinton, Bush Jr., Obama. We spend a lot of time and a lot of political energy in the United States saying, oh, that one's the bad guy, that one's the good guy. This one's crazy. This one's on the left. This one's on the right. This is ridiculous. This is just theater. No one's on the left. No one's on the right. They're all just where they're supposed to be, doing the long-term deep state bidding. So this is why it's interesting to have Donald Trump post this. It's interesting to hear the things he's saying. But don't get too excited about anything, because as President Putin said in his famous interview in Figaro in 2017, the presidents come into office and they have ideas. But then men in dark suits and blue ties come and tell them about the reality. And there go the ideas. You never hear about them again. Well, we'll see, therefore.
We will indeed. I just wanted to quickly say that one of the things about Middle East wars is that they always lead from one to the other, because they never achieve that point of miraculous stability and success.
How could they? Running against deep social and historical and political truths. Yeah. So the idea that Israel is going to be the great empire of the Middle East and it's going to impose that by force and by the force of the United States in an Arab and Islamic region of hundreds of millions of people is plainly fatuous, idiotic, suicidal. Well, but that's actually the policy of these people.
Well, they're now talking about war against Turkey. I mean, there's actually been a government report in Israel saying this, that, you know, we've got to prepare for war with Turkey and we need to start arming to fight Turkey, which is, of course, a NATO ally. And we're getting people like Michael Rubin, who I think you've come across. He's actually written articles in the U.S. about, you know, we must be prepared to kill Turks.
Part of the problem is that there is such a dominant view in Washington blob opinion that you hire people inevitably that continue the blob policies. And so one of Trump's realities in the first term and probably again now is that whatever he actually believes, a lot of the so-called lieutenants will do end runs around the president. We have these memoirs of John Bolton, who is one of the more repulsive figures of American politics, who brags about how he repeatedly tricked the president when Trump was president and he was the national security advisor, and he didn't like what the president wanted, so he found ways to trick him. This is the reality. This is perhaps the modus operandi that President Putin describes about the people who come and explain. Maybe they don't explain. Maybe they just trick the president. But when it comes to the Israel disaster, because it is a disaster for Israel, of course, a greater disaster for the Palestinians and for the Middle East, which has been in flames for decades now because of Israel's policies. There are two distinct parts of the Israel story that are feeding each other, but are both leading Israel to disaster. One is that policy is overwhelmingly dictated by the military and by the security. And you see this constantly. If it's true in the United States that the politicians are to an extent a sideshow, in Israel, it's Mossad and the IDF that call the shots more than just about any other part of society. So this is a militarized state. This is a military regime. It's a security regime. It has all of the profound debilities of being a militarized regime, which is that there's no such thing as diplomacy. There's no understanding that the way to peace has a different route, which is you actually talk to the other side and find a way to make a solution. So this is a country that for decades completely abandoned any diplomacy at all with the Arab world or with the Islamic world more generally or with the neighbors in general. None. No diplomacy. But that's the route that Israel is on and that the United States has blindly fed. And at least this I can say, I can't wait to see the back of the Biden administration. At least with Donald Trump coming in, we have a chance of something different.
You heard excerpts from a one-hour-long conversation with Professor Jeffrey Sachs on the prospects for peace and reasons for war. You can find the full video on YouTube under the title Will Trump Deliver Peace? Jeffrey Sachs, Alexander Mercouris, and Glenn Deason. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Glodden. Thank you for listening.